As I mentioned at the opening of the service this week, we're focusing on God's in the midst of natural disasters. And in this last week, talking about this with some of you in our Wednesday Bible study at different places, most everyone I talk to has a story related to some natural disaster. Some were actually actively in them. Some were affected by them secondarily. Some weren't affected, but they're near enough to them that the story resonated. A near miss, perhaps. One thing that often comes up in these stories, and the ones that really remain and reside in us, is the way those natural disasters bind people together. Extraordinary acts of love and compassion with one another to help each other. 2 years ago, when the fires came through Oregon so suddenly, I've heard so many stories of neighbors helping each other pack their cars, prepare plans if they would have moved to level 2 to level 3, and communities coming together. For me, when my family was evacuated and staying with my in-laws, I called my grandmother, who was living in Silverton, who wasn't evacuated yet, but could have been and lived alone and didn't drive, to find out, did she have a plan and what was going on? She'd already made a plan with the neighbors who were going to set up a thing, but being the grandson, she preferred my plans instead. But my brother-in-law was calling his aunt in a very similar situation. It was no questions asked. What does this person next to you need? How can we help them? And that happened for those who were not well known to each other. And in those moments, we often can think of the wisdom of, say, Fred Rogers in the midst of tragedy, who always would say, look to the helpers to find hope. That sense of togetherness and meaning. And I think when we reflect on those moments, that just makes us inwardly beam of how we can bind together as a community. And that's all very true and very real and very important. But you know, there is a second step. Especially when it comes to natural disasters, particularly wildfires, it's amazing how quickly that togetherness can erode. In the actual moment of the disaster, we band together. But as soon as we get out of it and have a moment to stop and say, what just happened? Often our newfound unity falls apart. We start to get into a debate. How did this happen? Some immediately talk about climate change making these disasters so frequent. Others vociferously reacting and challenging that climate had anything to do with it. Others challenging the way the government prepared for it or responded to it, and the debate goes on and people become so passionate on this subject that it's hard to even talk any longer. But of course, what happened in that debate? Pretty soon, we aren't looking at the real devastation and destruction of what was lost. People's homes destroyed, hundreds of years of growth, the challenge that rescue and recovery workers have and are going to have, the trauma of losing everything and not knowing where next to turn. I've been told by some people living up the McKenzie that after their houses burned, they're still in the temporary trailer housing because they haven't been able to get everything through to build a new home. Today's service is not a moment to invite ethical charges about climate or castigate one another for our ideological positions. And I'm further not interested in talking about the causes of natural disasters, whether they're cyclical or human-caused. And I don't want to make light of those topics. There are times and places for that. But today, I want to invite us to do something else. I'd like us to pause, to recognize the disasters we have faced and are going to continue to face are losses in our lives. They're real traumas. Some are very direct. Some of you might have lost a home or even a loved one in a disaster. Others might know someone who has. Others have not lost anyone, but can see the disaster and feel the presence of them in your bodies. When you go up the Mackenzie or any forest that has been burned, and you're in that space of what once was a vibrant space, and while there is some new growth, there is just that sense that's ominous and often kind of spooky, and it's really a sense of loss being in that space. So instead of what we often do today, I'd like us to invite us to grieve. To grieve that which has been lost. As all of you know, when we lose those near us, grief is an abiding present inside of us that will find an outlet. And of course, there's not only one model for doing that. In the Bible, one of the ways the grief was managed was through the lens of lament. In those moments of crying out, as we did at the beginning of this service, "How long, O Lord?" But there's more to lament than just crying out, "How long?" They begin not actually with simply a cry of dereliction, but instead with a recognition of God's promises for our lives. Only after those promises are known can it lead to a question of current suffering, naming what's happened among us. And from naming who God has been, naming the suffering of our present circumstance, then we cry out to God, "How long, O Lord? It feels like you've forgotten me. Why are you hiding your face from me? Why don't you act? I want you to solve this." That cry leads to a statement of God's deliverance. And finally, to praise. Lament holds two things that are true. First, I am suffering. Second, you are God. It's holding that there is a real challenge within us, and I don't know what to do about it. And second, my hope is in you. That's what leads to praise. My suffering can't praise right now, but my hope can. And I can find that hope, but only through my grief, only through my suffering, both things present at once. In our second reading from Romans today that Honor read for us, Paul is talking with a theology of lament. He speaks of groaning, or maybe better, wailing, the cry made to God from our deepest, innermost beings and suffering. A cry of lament, a cry of deep grief. Paul makes clear, though, that we're not the only ones crying out. So too is the very creation alongside us. As our reading from Jeremiah says, the earth mourns. But the earth isn't alone. So us too. We recognize that the world we live in every sense broken, limited, and full of the power of sin. All is not right. And so in those moments of grief, in those moments of pain, in those moments where we recognize the loss we've experienced, in the destruction around us, what we really are seeing is the brokenness of our whole world. And what makes that hard to see is what it means for the brokenness of ourselves. The limitation of what we can control. I believe one of the hardest things about processing grief in every circumstance is, what will it say about who I am and who I am if what I have lost is gone? The losses that have built up live inside us. And of course, processing that grief is much of the hardest work we'll ever do in our lives. And those of you who've lost those dearest to you know that so very robustly. So what does it mean for us to process the grief of the disasters in the world we live in, the losses of what we think of as home. It shows us our fragility, our weakness. We see how quickly and how unexpectedly we can lose everything, yes, indeed, even ourselves. So where do we find hope? In our reading, Paul doesn't do something we would have expected. He doesn't say glibly, God is in control. Well, it may be true that God is in control. Paul's not interested in a vague, abstract statements that might make for good bumper stickers, but are really hard to see and feel in moments of grief. Instead, he moves far more personally and meaningfully. Paul says of this lament that while you and the earth are groaning forward, that you are joined by the Holy Spirit alive within you. God is joining you in this lament. When there are sighs too deep for words, when there is nothing you can say in your grief, the Spirit is alive within you, acting on your behalf, interceding and bringing forth your being to God's very own self. The cry of distress in a lament, like we did in Psalm 42, is a cry that God feels absent, that God's not here. Paul tells us that even when we feel God is absent, not only is God present, but God is the very one making that lament with you. It's God bringing forth the grief you're holding. And processing that grief, just like processing any grief, is not going to change the external circumstance around us. Those disasters remain real. Those that have happened, that have left their destruction, or those that are coming, will come, whether we process that grief or not. But processing that grief changes the internal character of ourselves. It allows us to look deeply within and answer that question, who am I? Why do I matter? If I cry out that God has abandoned me, that's often not really a cry about my circumstances, but my feeling of worth. The feeling that I'm so insignificant that not even God cares. In Romans, Paul goes right there. In his discussion of the lament and grief, the deliverance is not a vague idea, but instead is a personal statement about your own worth. Our hope is not in an idea, but a relationship with a living God. Paul makes clear that you, each one of you, are children of God. God chose you as valuable and precious. God embraces you as God's own. God has brought you into the family of God. God has justified you as righteous, and God's glorified you to God's very own presence. Glorification is language of resurrection. It's language that in our dying with Christ in baptism, so too is our rising with Christ in glory. One could imagine talking about resurrection with natural disasters to be about the resurrection of the fields and the forests, that God brings from death new life. That's true, but Paul invites us to internal space. After looking at the world around us and how fragile it is, after seeing how vulnerable and fragile we are as people, after we are brought to saying, what even am I? Paul says, you are God's. The resurrection that is alive in you and for you, each and every one of you. The hope we have is not only in the huge machinations of the world to address systemic issues, but the direct relationship between Christ and us. That is when we can find in our grief, because when we process through grief, we find our true hope, that we are God's precious possession. That's our hope and can lead us with the psalmist finally to praise. Our lament When we look around in grief, how long, O Lord, is our hope that we are God's and that God is always for us and never against us? Thanks be to God. Amen.